Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, a legend passes away, some new food merchandise,
a pop-up event celebrating Mickey, a new photo wall, we talk live shows at the park, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of February 20th, 2019. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to send a shout out and a big thank you to all of our supporters on Patreon, including Jason M., Leanne K., and Megan O., who just joined us at the Park Hopper level, Russell M. for increasing your support to the AP level, and also to Sarah E. for joining us at the cast member level. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live show recordings, some DL Weekly swag, and more. If you'd like to learn more, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Well, a few weeks ago, we talked with Fred from Touring Plans about how their system helps you get the most out of your day at Disneyland. We're happy to announce that as a listener of DL Weekly, you can get your first year of Touring Plans free when you contact James or Mike over at Concierge to book your next Disney vacation. Concierge is offering this to all listeners of the show exclusively. Be sure to let them know that you are a DL Weekly listener. Concierge will get your hotel, tickets, dining reservations, and everything else customized for you, and then you can log on to Touring Plans and get your days laid out so you can get the best value for your times at the park. I think it is a great value and an awesome combination with those two.
Well, if you're going to the park soon and want to be wearing some DL Weekly swag, head on over to dlweekly.net/store to pick some up. Today through February 24th, if you order something, you can get 30% off.
Now let's get to the news. In a sad bit of news, Dave Smith, the archivist for the Walt Disney Company, passed away this week. He was 78. Dave created the archives in 1970, which houses items such as Walt's parents' marriage certificate from 1888, ticket number one for Disneyland, and the original Steamboat Willie script, and many more.
Just such, I mean, what a huge contribution that this man had to preserving all of the different aspects of the history of Walt Disney, the company, and also the man himself. I mean, I would just love to spend just an hour going through and just looking and seeing what I could see in the archives. And, you know, just to think that none of this may not, you know, this stuff may not still be around if it wasn't for Dave Smith. So thank you, sir.
Yes, Dave Smith did some really great work. He worked for the archives and maintained them for over 40 years.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, there is, like Teresa said, a lot of things that would not even be around if he hadn't, like, found and kind of saved them. Anybody in the company that had ever interacted with him knew that he was the guy that had the answers to anything having to do with Disney history. One thing that's really cool about him is that he liked to set the record straight on things. So there's a lot of rumors stuff about the Disney company and various things. And so he likes to debunk or liked to debunk these kind of things. It was, what's amazing to me was when he started there, he was the only person to do the Disney archives. And now there are 24 people as of 2016 that work on it. That is amazing that he's created this legacy for the company. And I'm really happy because one of the things I'm really excited to see at the D23 Expo is the Disney archives section.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's just amazing because the other cool thing is just, you know, it was enough work just for him beginning out. But the fact that they keep uncovering more and preserving more history that they had to grow, it's just, it's great.
Yeah. Well, he'll be missed.
I'm sure there are some of you that might not like our food discussions as much as we do, but even Disney is getting into the act with food-themed merchandise. Some new items, such as shirts with Mickey ears made out of donuts proclaiming, "Donut judge me, I'm on vacation," string lights in the shape of favorite snacks at the resort, and more. Is it too much food?
I don't know. I think that I like the cleverness of a lot of these new items.
Some of them I really, really like. Other ones I'm not that big of a fan of. The thing that's really kind of difficult for me is some of them I think are very, very obviously Disney themed. You know, it's
sure.
It's the Dole Whip, it's the Mickey shaped pretzel, or the mm-hmm. premium ice cream bar. It's very classic Disney, I guess, mm-hmm. just in general. Whereas other things, you know, like there's one that says, which I think is funny, it's like churro eating world champion or something mm-hmm. like that. To me, it's not as Disney. It's a nod to Disney, but I could see people not knowing things yeah. about Disney, not realizing that it is Disney merchandise. So I don't know. I kind of have mixed feelings. I think some of it's really awesome and really fun and clever. Others, just not quite my style. But
yeah, I get what you're saying about not, because a lot of the things you can get at Disney is, you look at it and you know right away, Disney or mm-hmm. Disneyland, you know, mm-hmm. that type of stuff. But I get what you're saying for sure. Well, the good news is that there's also some new attractions themed merchandise as well. Some of the featured attractions include the Mad Tea Party and It's a Small World. Even having some fun with the Tamer attraction sporting I Survived with a design from It's a Small World. You know, I feel like Vern would really like this because doesn't he get driven nuts by the It's a Small World theme? Yes,
the song gets stuck in his head for the rest of the trip once we have been on the attraction. So he kind of tries to put it off towards the end. It's not that he doesn't enjoy it. He just doesn't want to have that song stuck in his mm-hmm. head the whole time. So yeah, that would be a good one for him.
I like the kind of play because I feel like that there are, I'm sure that there are some listeners of ours that aren't into the thrill rides, but something that's kind of cute, like I Survived or whatever for that, could be good.
Well, of course, I'm excited for the Small World ears because I get excited for any and all ears. But I think it's really neat because there's just so many different things. You know, it's not just the same old whatever. There's ornament sets, there's purses, there's wallets, there's t-shirts, there's ears, so many different things. And I think it's nice that some of these classic attractions are getting kind of put more in the spotlight, because there's always been merch for some other big attractions.
Haunted Mansion
for sure, and Pirates, yes, for sure. But these other ones kind of get overlooked when it comes to this, so I'm glad that there's, you know, a hint and a nod towards those attractions as well. I really like that shirt.
For those of you listening, it is the Mad Tea Party shirt.
Sorry, I didn't think. Yeah. Well, in one more merchandise news tidbit, there are some new Mickey and Minnie ears that have appeared around the resort. Of course, I'm very excited about this. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the designs actually reminds us of the 50th anniversary ears, because they feature the castle with the world's happiest place on Earth and gold ears with fireworks designs. That's kind of the Mickey-themed ears. Mm-hmm. But the new Minnie ears feature sequined ears that are silver, a sparkling Sleeping Beauty castle with a light gold bow. I love them. I need them.
You know, one thing that was interesting from the article where we got this information was they have these for both parks, for mm-hmm. for the Magic Kingdom and for Disneyland. And the Magic Kingdom one looks like really deflated.
It does.
And the Sleeping Beauty castle looks great.
I had to do a double take when I saw the photo, because I thought the little castle bedazzled thing on top, I thought it was broken. I thought somebody had accidentally taken a picture of a castle that the topmost spire was actually broken off. But then upon looking at it closer, no, it was just a more dwarfed looking castle, I guess would be a good way of saying it.
So next time you go to the parks, are you gonna like grow your collection?
I was gonna say, are you buying these ears? And that was my yes, I'm getting these ears. Oh, well, of course, my it's going
to
be...
We're going to need to bring a whole bag just for your ears.
No, it's going to be... No, I got to pace myself. I've got to pace myself, because there's just so many amazing ears out there. You can only wear so many at a time. There's only so many days in your Disney vacation.
You can only wear so many at a time. How many are you going to wear at a time,
exactly,
Teresa?
Exactly. You can only wear one at a time. So it's not like I could buy 20 and then be able to wear all 20 during the trip.
Gotcha.
Unless I took a backpack with me.
And just swapped them during the day. Backpack,
and I could just swap them out throughout the day. Yeah, exactly.
You're nuts.
Until I lose said backpack and like cry.
And then like 10 ears are gone.
Oh, $200+ just gone. That'd be awful.
The resort is making the slow switch from plastic lids and straws to more eco-friendly options. At many of the food locations around the resort, they're still giving plastics out by default. If you want the most environmentally friendly location, the Hungry Bear restaurant has paper straws and plenty of them. We're sure that it, as time goes on, the remainder of the plastic supplies they have on hand will be depleted, and the paper alternatives will replace them.
I'm very excited that we're seeing some of the paper straws in Disneyland, because before, the only place that you would see paper straws at a Disney park was over in Walt Disney World. So it's nice to see that they are making their appearance, and they are coming to Disneyland. It's one of those things that I kind of wonder, because yes, you want to get rid of the plastic things, you know, the lids, the straws, sure, whatever, but how much of that stuff do you think they already had on hand? So it'd be extra wasteful if they just
threw it away.
Today we're switching to paper straws or paper whatever, yep, done, and so they just waste all the other ones. So I get that they're probably trying to go through and use the other things. They might also be trying to find the thing that I've been wondering is the plastic, like soda cup lids. What do you replace that with?
Because I was thinking that too.
The obvious answer would be no lid. Well, that's not always.
You're spilling stuff everywhere.
Yeah, that's not always the best option. So I wonder if maybe they're taking their time trying to find better alternatives that are going to work.
You know what they should do? And this literally just popped in my head while you were talking about this. Was there are other parks, and Disney I think does this from time to time as well, but where you offer a thing where you're like, buy this mug for $20.
Oh, yeah.
And then your refill is like $1 or something.
Yeah.
And then it actually ends up being cheaper, but then you have something that is reusable and a souvenir and has a lid and maybe a hardcore plastic straw.
Yeah. So, not this past trip, but the trip before that, Vern and I had purchased something like that at Disneyland. I don't think it was a deal where you buy it for this much and then you get refills, sure, at a discount. I think it was just buy the souvenir cup. But we kept using it throughout the day and refilling it with water,
yeah,
so that we had water on hand. But I'm sure they wouldn't have any problem if you had a reusable cup like that and went up, purchased a soda, and just asked them to fill your reusable cup instead, right, of using a paper cup.
I'm just saying down the road, if they want to get rid of and be completely environmentally friendly, because even paper stuff, that's trees and stuff and recycled paper, you know, it's got to come from somewhere. But you
got to think of it this way, because look at bags, for instance. Some, sure, people were very worried that they were going to be forced and have to buy the reusable bag, that there would be no other option for, mm-hmm, them to get their merchandise home. Yeah. They'd either have to purchase the bag or carry it themselves. That's not the case. The plastic bags are still available. They're just trying to not get as much. So think about that with if you had offered beverages and didn't supply cups.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do that. I don't think you'd be able to. I think you can have it as an option for sure.
Yeah.
But you would still have to have the paper cups and the disposable cups.
I'm just thinking if you make it an economically viable thing, because right now when you go to the parks, I mean, drinks are like $4, right? You know, for like a small drink, mm-hmm, or whatever, it's like $4. So if you could offer, you pay $10 for the cup and then it's $1 per refill. If you're there for 5 days or 4 days or whatever, like that ends up being a really economical deal.
Oh, for sure.
So. Yeah.
Nope, I totally get that, but I don't think we'll ever see it just that way.
Yeah.
I think there's always going to be disposable things at the park.
I think I saw an article, I can't remember if it was for Disneyland or for Disney World, but this last week, but they were talking about that the old, I think it was for Disneyland now that I think about it, that the old cups were very flimsy, so when you would like pick them up without a lid, they would like squish, and that's a problem, mm-hmm, and that they had switched over to some firmer cups that you could carry and it wouldn't squish, so I think they're figuring it out. It's not, they haven't found the right combination of things for everything yet.
Yep. And it'll take time because it's a large place. So
yeah,
just, I cannot even imagine the warehouse probably of all of the cups and all of the little like boat things that they put food in and all of the little plastic wrappery, not plastic, but the little paper wrappers that they give you for your churros. Like how much of that stuff they have.
Right.
Just on hand because,
well, yeah, you just think about
that they go through. It's
how much like one restaurant in the real, you know, outside of Disneyland has to have for all that. Well, there's dozens of restaurants in Disneyland. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Disney is joining the pop-up movement at the resort with Pop-Up Disney, a Mickey celebration. This pop-up location in downtown Disney will feature themed rooms with displays inspired by Mickey and Minnie Mouse. There are sure to be plenty of photo opportunities, like a giant sofa in the shape of Minnie's bow. The pop-up location will be in the former ESPN Zone building near the monorail station.
I am intrigued with this because
I'm excited.
some of the concept art and stuff of this is it's just supposed to be like a really kind of fun experience. And I think it's good that they're finally putting something in the ESPN Zone area. Yeah. I feel like when you go in, at least from the concept art that Disney's released, I feel like you're going to feel like Alice going down the rabbit hole. You know what I mean? Like this giant Minibo, like you're shrunk. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's fun just because it's something different to do with Downtown Disney. It's very much themed to Disney, obviously, where it's all about Mickey and all about Minnie. But just with how popular different photo walls are around the resort, I think that this is going to be a hit. Plus, just the fact that it's taking up and doing something with the kind of ghost town section of Downtown Disney, yeah. I think is really helpful.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, it is a separately ticketed exhibit, so it isn't just something that is there and free to the public, so that might, I could see how that maybe would deter some people.
Well, it depends on
whether,
how much the ticket is.
Whether or not you'd be wanting to actually pay to go through it, and yes, you're right, it depends on, you know, if it's going to be a reasonable price or if it's maybe not going to be so reasonable. I'm going to hope, fingers crossed, that it's reasonable.
Yeah, let's hope so. Well, if you ever wondered what Disney does with old props from retired attractions or lands, you don't have to go far to find out. Some of the popsicle benches from A Bug's Land have been placed in Toontown near Goofy's house. Some folks online have questioned the theming of the benches with Toontown, but were generally happy with the addition of more seating.
Yeah, you know, and I can see both sides of this. I can see how this fits in Toontown, and I can also see why people don't think it fits very well in Toontown. Some people were mentioning, which I think made perfect sense, is if these benches were perhaps move closer to Gadget's Go Coaster,
yeah,
and over by like Chippendale's Treehouse, that would make a little bit more sense
scale wise. Yeah,
for, you know, scale wise, because they would be picking up regular size popsicle,
sure,
sticks and being able to make that into a seating bench, whereas Goofy is kind of life size or human size, I guess we could say. So it wouldn't make as much sense for him to have pops, but he's also very, it's Goofy. He's Goofy. So so I could see him having something just look like that and thinking it's funny and clever, because it is nice. They are brightly colored popsicle sticks. But who knows? Maybe in the future, these will not be painted the same. Maybe they'll get a fresh coat of paint and they won't look quite so popsicle stick-esque.
I'm just glad that they are using,
yeah, oh, for sure,
some things back in the parks instead of ending up at like a Eaton Galleries auction thing.
Yep, nope. I think it's great that they're reusing these things too. Plus, just the fact that they're adding more seating is awesome as well. Well, the gate in Toontown next to Minnie's house that we reported previously as having a Minnie design with polka dots has been rethemed to another fun photo wall. The new version of the gate features Mickey and Minnie holding balloons and a heart with a sign that says "Celebrate and Love Your Pals" on a cloud at the bottom.
So,
it's so cute.
So I, because it was a Minnie thing. It was like one of the Instagram wall-y kind of things.
Just polka dots.
So, I mean, it's nice that it has this. Obviously, it's celebrating their 90th birthday, which I think is cute. Of course, adding any type of theming and stuff is great. I don't know. I don't really have, like, strong opinions either way, I guess, on it.
So, me personally, I actually like this wall a little bit better.
It's definitely more vivid.
I like the colors seem to kind of match more, so it feels like it blends in better to the area than the previous polka dot wall did. As fun as that polka dot wall was,
right,
it didn't, it fit, but it kind of, it also sort of clashed, I feel, in a way.
Sure.
So it's nice to me that this kind of is super cute, very well themed to the area, but it just, I don't know, the colors seem to complement better, I guess,
sure,
a good way of saying it.
I like the fact that they're taking something as boring as a gate and turning it into something more visually interesting.
I think so. I hope that we get to see more of this kind of stuff around the park.
Oh, I'm sure. I feel like they're just doing more and more. Obviously, over in Hollywoodland, there's all those Instagram walls that have been popping up. So I think definitely more and more. Actually, I think that whole pop-up thing seems to be kind of aimed at the Instagram people.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, sticking kind of to Toontown, in an unconfirmed rumor from David Koenig, author of Mouse Tales, the maintenance shops backstage just north of Toontown will be closing. The cast members working in these areas have been informed that they will be relocated 2 miles off-site to make room for, quote, potential future expansion. This is the area rumored to be where the Mickey's Runaway Railway attraction will be constructed.
Say that 3 times fast.
I don't know why I have such a hard time saying it.
So this, well, it's a tongue twister. I would be the same way. But anyway, so back to the story. So you guys, this is totally a rumor. This was something that David had just thrown out there. But, you know, it is really interesting, though, because this is exactly the area that they were talking about putting the new attraction in. So fingers crossed that maybe we're getting a new attraction in Toontown, and maybe Toontown will get a little bit more love and more people will go visit the Toons.
Well, what excited me was last week, of course, we had Fresh Baked on. Mm-hmm. And today he posted, actually after I had put this in the show, while I was waiting for Teresa to come over, I watched, he posted a new construction update.
Sure.
And he talked about this rumor.
Oh, so we have two sources for our rumor now.
But I think he got it from David Koenig.
Gotcha.
But he was saying that he thinks, and this got me excited, that this plus a couple other things are going to be announced at D23. He's thinking they're waiting for.
Oh, I bet so.
That'll be exciting.
How many days? I just looked at our day counter. 180 some days, I think it is, until D23.
Yeah.
It can't come soon enough.
182 more days.
Well, now it's time to head on over to Trivia Land, where producer James will try and stump us with some Disney trivia. He's going to read us the questions we're going to try to answer, and then James will give us the correct answers after the discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week?
All right, our first question is, what Disney character was on hand for the decommissioning of the submarine attraction on September 8th, 1998?
I'm going to say Ariel.
I'm going to go with Mickey.
Mickey? Okay.
It's a bold choice. I don't know
what. But they were talking about maybe making it into
Atlantis.
Oh.
They were talking about Atlantis.
Do you want to switch from Mickey to some Atlantis character?
No, I don't think it was an Atlantis character.
Okay.
Didn't Atlantis come out in the 2000s anyway?
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, because there was a chunk of time where there was.
I mean, not that I'm helping you figure out the answer or anything.
Yeah, no. There's a long time that it was just a poor, empty lagoon.
All right, moving on.
All right, second question. This comes from listener Thompson. And the question is, did Disneyland open on July 17th or July 18th?
Okay. This is hotly debated. Hotly debated because technically July 17th, 1955 was the media day, and it opened to the public on the 18th. So it depends on what you mean. But if we're going to go for public opening, it's the 18th.
See, I'm going to say the 17th. Because I feel like whenever you look it up, the 17th is always the date that you see
it. I agree. But I think we're going for public.
Is the like anniversary date.
It is. Like when they celebrate the birthday, it's the 17th.
I'm going 17th.
All right.
That is the debate, Thompson. Predicted exactly with this conversation. So
thanks for the question, Thompson.
All right. Our third question comes from Daniel. And Daniel wants to know, how old is the petrified tree displayed in Frontierland?
Oh, it's like 2,000 years old. 2,000 plus years old. But I don't remember like an exact year. How close are we getting? Does he want like exact years?
We'll go within 5 million years.
I'm going to say...
Oh, Jesus.
I'm going to say... So you're not even close.
Three, for some reason, was sticking out to me. So I'm going to go 3 million years.
I like how I said 2,000 plus and you said 3 million after he said million.
No, 3 was sticking to me and you said like 5. All right. You said 2,000.
Well, I know I got that one wrong, apparently.
I am barely holding back laughter after you gave that answer, Tag. All right, so our last question comes to us from listener Lauren W., and she wants to know, what park attraction was originally the ticket booth when Disneyland had the pay-per-attraction model?
Well, there's a couple. Okay,
attraction still has the ticket booth?
Well, there's two.
There's Alice in Wonderland, the mushroom.
Yep.
And then there's the lighthouse.
Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Well, look at you two being so confident. We'll see if they did well right after the discussion topic.
Well, this week for the discussion topic, we are taking a topic that was voted on by you guys, and it was talking about live shows like Mickey and the Magical Map or the Dick Tracy Show. So we're going to start by just giving kind of a really high history. Overview of history of the area, and then we're going to talk just about a few of the things. We're not going to talk about all the different shows. We're just going to pick a few. I picked some out that I've actually seen, and I remember a little bit from when I was a kid. Teresa has some that she's experienced, so we're going to kind of talk about that. So we also are limiting this to what is now the Fantasyland Theater.
Mm-hmm.
But originally was Videopolis when it was built.
Yes.
So what was the first show in Videopolis?
All right. So Videopolis actually opened back in 1985. And so Videopolis is, like Tag mentioned, where the Fantasyland Theater is today. Same spot there. So if you guys don't know where that is, it's kind of back by It's a Small World, but if you have entered Toontown, you've gone too far.
Yeah.
Kind of just kind of off to the side. You actually get to see it pretty well from the train.
Yep.
You can kind of peek down in there.
Get off at the Toontown Depot, mm-hmm. like it's right there.
Yeah. It's a really nice theater.
It is.
It's shaded, which is awesome.
It gets a nice breeze.
It has,
actually.
Yep. It's actually, for being an outdoor theater, it's very very cool the times that I've mm-hmm. been there. Now I've never been there on any of the like record high heat days, but I think it's very comfortable considering it's an outdoor theater. The other thing that's really nice is when they designed this theater, they definitely designed it with the guest in mind, because it feels like there is not a bad seat in the house when you're sitting there. It's nice and sloped. The there's nice spacing, I feel, between the benches.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's very, very well done theater. I really enjoy going to see shows there personally. But anyways, so Videopolis was actually pretty cool, because during the day it would have these different shows, but then at night it'd be transformed into this kind of like dance club where they would play music videos. There looks like there were 70 different video monitors that displayed all of these different videos or live feeds that let the guests kind of watch themselves having a good time. So
it was very 80s.
It was very neat. But anyway, so the first show, because we're talking about the shows that started at Videopolis, was The Magic of Christmas. And so that ran the Christmas seasons from 1985 through 1988. So again, it wasn't running the whole time. It was just during the holiday seasons. Mm-hmm. Next show was Singin' Dancin' Hi-Ho, which was in 1987. Circus Fantasy, which was 1988, which if I could go back in time, I'm very much drawn to this show.
Well, you and really both like the circus.
Really like circuses, so I think that this would be a really fun kind of mashup of Disney and the circus.
So this next one was from 1989, was called Showbiz Is, and I'm not sure about what that is at all. It's kind of
Showbiz,
I suppose. But it's but Showbiz Is, yep. Like, that's weird. And then the next one is actually a show they had called One Man's Dream, which was a celebration of Walt Disney that played from December 16th, 1989 through April 29th, 1990.
I would like to go back in time and watch this show as well.
Yeah. So I was looking at this one because it actually originally premiered in Tokyo Disneyland and then came to Disneyland, you know, in Anaheim.
Oh, sure.
But it also, it started and closed before the one in Tokyo. So it ran in Tokyo for a little while longer. But it's kind of neat to kind of have like a show that kind of was dedicated to Walt Disney and kind of his legacy. I will say the interesting thing about this too is if you go to Disney World and you go to Hollywood Studios, there is a movie that they play called One Man's Dream. This is not the same thing. And then the next show that was in there after One Man's Dream closed, and I remember this one, and this is one of the ones I picked, was Dick Tracy in Diamond Double Cross. And so I don't remember a lot of the show itself. I do remember seeing it, because I remember Dick Tracy wore that like bright yellow suit or zoot suit. And I just remember seeing that in this theater because it, you know, it's something that kind of sticks in your head because they're all wearing such bright, vivid colors.
Well, they almost look cartoonish.
They do, yeah. And that was kind of the whole thing with Dick Tracy. And so it was a stage show based on the feature film that came out in 1990. It also played in MGM Studios, so it was at both parks. And then, again, the same kind of situation. It closed at Disneyland first, also in 1990. So it didn't last very long. It only lasted from June through December.
Well, after that, Plane Crazy, that featured characters from Tailspin and Disney Afternoon, ran from March 15th, 1991 through September of the same year. I love Tailspin. I have never personally seen a Tailspin character in a Disney park. So again, I would like to travel back in time just to see the Tailspin characters in the park.
This was a magnificent time to be at the park because the whole area between the Matterhorn and It's a Small World mm-hmm. was turned into this Disney Afternoon Avenue and all of the Disney Afternoon things. So you had, in fact, Beth, my friend Beth, she remembers this vividly because it had Darkwing Duck and it had Tailspin and it had all the characters from the
Adventures
Disney Afternoon.
Adventures of the Gummy Bears.
Oh, I love the Gummy Bears. So,
Chippendale Rescue. Oh man, I could just keep going.
So that was just for that summer that they were kind of really pushing the Disney Afternoon situation. So that's kind of why that was there. Now the next one was a replacement for the Magic of Christmas show that played during the holidays, and that was Mickey's Nutcracker. I also remember seeing this. It was obviously the traditional tale of the Nutcracker, mm-hmm. but it was Mickey Mouse.
And that ran for the Christmas seasons of 1991 and 1992. And the last show as Videopolis, as the theater was then called, was Beauty and the Beast Live on Stage, which ran from April 2nd, 1992 through April 30th, 1995. Now, I can't say that I saw the Beauty and the Beast Live on Stage at Disneyland. I did see this, though, when I was younger at Disney World. So this originally opened actually over in Disney World in 1991, which was the same year as the film's premiere. It wasn't until 1992, though, that this came to Disneyland. The Disneyland version was slightly different than the Walt Disney World version, but a lot of the same favorite songs, of course. There's so many good songs. And, you know, every time that you see, I've seen, obviously, the movie, Beauty and the Beast. I've seen the live-action movie, Beauty and the Beast. I've seen Beauty and the Beast on Broadway, and I have seen Beauty and the Beast at Walt Disney World. Such a great theatrical show. I have not been disappointed with any of them. So
yeah,
I feel like you can't go wrong with Beauty and the Beast. Such great music, such great performance. You know, it's very visual. It's very colorful. It's very lively.
Well, think about this, Teresa. You talked about how popular it was. Well, the show was so popular that it ran 4,300 times in just over 3 years.
That's just crazy.
So what does that calculate out to? 4,300 divided by 3. So 1,400 times a year. So divide that by 12. 119 times a month on average. That is crazy.
Now per day.
Not per day.
No.
Per day?
So 119.
119 divided by 31. It's almost four times a day.
Wow.
So I'm sure on some days they had four or five times and some days they had less. But
two or three.
That is
but
a
still,
lot.
That's a lot. That's crazy.
That is a lot. So after Beauty and the Beast Live on Stage left, they renamed the theater to the Fantasyland Theater, spelled T-H-E-A-T-E-R. It's important later. And they did the first show they did there opened in June of 1995, and it was the Spirit of Pocahontas show. I also remember the Spirit of Pocahontas show because this is when we went and experienced the 40th anniversary celebration and the Indiana Jones adventure that summer opening. So I do remember the Spirit of Pocahontas being there, and that was also a very good show. All of these shows, or a lot of these shows, I'll say, like Beauty and the Beast and Pocahontas, were very Broadway-esque shows. They were very well produced.
Very high caliber. And just looking at the sets from these shows, it makes you feel like you've become part of the movie and the movie is jumped off the screen and is being performed in front of you in real life. Because, I mean, I'm looking at the set right now for The Spirit of Pocahontas. It's very cartoon-like. It's not like they made it very, I don't know, real life looking. The trees and the plants and everything look very, they just look rounder and softer and like it was a cartoon.
Yeah, and the colors and stuff for sure.
Yes, it looks very much like you saw on the screen. So next we had Animazement, the musical, which ran from June 18th, 1998 through October 21st, 2001. Now, I had not seen this in person.
Me either.
But I was, the title, I just am thrilled with what they called this. So while we were getting the script together, Tag and I actually found an old video on YouTube of this, and we're watching different bits and pieces of it. And there were, Hercules was part of this one. We had the Hunchback of Notre Dame. There was a lot
of Pocahontas.
There was a lot of songs. Ariel, she was in there too. But there was a lot of songs that, you know, we see Ariel, and we hear Part of Your World and Under the Sea frequently. Beauty and the Beast, we have all that. It had its own show. Same thing with Pocahontas. But I was very surprised that we had Topsy Turvy from Hunchback of Notre Dame. And we also had different songs from Hercules, which, you know, Hercules has great music. It's not one of the ones that automatically, you know, comes to mind right away, but they really has some really fun, great sure. music. So it was neat to see that some of these kind of less popular movies got some credit and got their time.
Would you recommend our listeners go check this out on YouTube?
I would. It was unique. It was lots of very interesting sets. It was very clever, you know, and the thing that I thought was kind of cool is they kind of did mashups of the different characters' songs.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just listening to the same, you know, almost like you were listening to a soundtrack. It didn't feel like that. It was very different and very unique. So if you've got time, I would definitely recommend it.
Well, after Animazement closed in October of 2001, the Christmas season hit, and for the next 2 years, Minnie's Christmas Party would perform there, and I did not see this one.
Yeah, nope, I did not either. And then after Minnie's Christmas Party, we had Mickey's Detective School that ran from 2002 through 2003.
I do remember this one, too. I don't really remember anything about it, but I do remember that Mickey was dressed up like a Sherlock Holmes, like with the hat and everything.
Oh, with the hat, yep.
Yeah. I do remember catching part of this. Mm-hmm.
Next, we had Snow White, an enchanting musical that ran from February 2004 through September of 2006.
Now, this one I also remember seeing because I remember reading about it online as it was getting developed, and they spent a lot of time and money upgrading a lot of the sound system and technical aspects of the Fantasyland Theater. So they could do a lot of the stuff. This had some really cool special effects in it. It had a lot of set pieces that, for instance, when they were, going after the evil queen or whatever, and she like turned into the old hag and stuff. They did a lot of like smoke effects and lightning effects. And they had some sets that like, would like turn and people could drop through. I mean, there was a lot of very, elaborate staging on this one, and I enjoyed it. It was nice to see all of the dwarves and stuff come out too, because you don't see them too often all together like that. So it was pretty nice. I thought I liked it.
Looks like there was even an animated magic mirror, which was voiced by none other than Sir Patrick Stewart.
I love Patrick Stewart.
I just love that little kind of tidbit of, you know, everyone knows Patrick Stewart mostly from Star Trek, but the fact that he was the magic mirror, I just loved.
Well, the magic mirror here was cool too, because the way they did it, it was very theatrical. It was a regular mirror, and it would like swirl out of the way, and the face would be there, and the face looked like a broken part of the mirror, and it would talk.
Oh, yeah. No, that's very different from how you traditionally see the magic mirror, because usually it's like a smoky image that appears on the mirror. It's not the actual mirror.
Plus, look at the dwarfs. What do you notice that's different than the traditional dwarfs that you see in the park?
Oh, that they're real, like real people faces. It's not a full body costume with a head.
Mm-hmm. It's not the giant heads that they normally have. So it was kind of cool to see like realistic looking dwarfs.
So I think this is a really nice, looking at the costume and looking at the set, it's a very nice compromise between, you know, real life versus cartoon. It's kind of a good in-between feel. It's not too overly animated, but it's not too much looking like someone walking down the street that you don't believe it, and the magic is kind of washed away. It's a very nice in-between. Because I'm sure if the dwarves were in the full costumes and had the full headpieces, they wouldn't be able to perform as well as, you know.
Now,
they wouldn't have been able to actually be singing, whereas these guys would have been able to fully perform and sing. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And this also came out shortly after Aladdin, a musical spectacular, had appeared over in California Adventure. Because of the success of that and being very Broadway caliber, that's what encouraged them to do such a Broadway caliber version of Snow White. So that kind of explains a little bit of that. Unfortunately, this is where we kind of hit a snag for a few years. So after Snow White and Enchanting Musical left in September 2006, the area became kind of a meet and greet area. This is before the Princess Fantasy Fair was built by the castle. Mm-hmm. So this was turned into kind of an area for meet and greets for a long time. So it wasn't really used for performances.
For shows.
So it was really nice. I was very happy when May of 2013, on the 25th, they actually changed the name again of the Fantasyland Theater to be the Fantasyland Theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E, and they put in Mickey and the Magical Map, which is an amazing production.
So good. So, so good.
So tell everybody about Mickey and the Magical Map Trees.
So for those of you that haven't seen it, first of all, I highly, highly recommend for you to go and see this. I don't know why, but I always had this kind of thing in the back of my head. I never made it a priority to go back and see this show because for some reason, I don't know if it was the title that made me think this or why, but for some reason I thought that this was geared towards small children. And so I didn't think it would be something that me as an adult would be that interested in. So I just never took the time to go back there to enjoy the show. However, last trip, Vern and I did go back there, and holy cow, I am so glad that we did. The caliber of this show, the special effects, the giant LED screen that's basically the backdrop for the stage is incredible.
Yeah.
There were some effects that happened during the show that I honestly was baffled. And I think I've talked about it before on the podcast. I was just baffled as to how they did it because they did so well that I did not know it was like magic tricks happening in front of my eyes.
There's segments where literally there's a part of the show where it literally looks like Mickey is coming out of the screen.
Yes, he like walks out of the screen, basically.
It is amazing. And then there's a part towards the end, which I was not ready for, where the map actually like splits in half and more set pieces come out. And I was like, how did that just happen?
It's because incredible.
And the screen is so crisp. It's not, you know, you usually with a larger screen like that, sometimes it can seem grainy or pixelated, but it wasn't.
No, it felt like you could like touch it. It was so crystal clear. So kind of just to summarize the show to give you an idea of what all goes on. So the show kind of starts with Mickey, and he's in the studio of Yen Sid, who, if you guys don't remember who that is, he's, you know him from Fantasia in The Sorcerer's Apprentice. He is the sorcerer. But in this part, he's actually a map maker, and he's creating this giant magical map, which is the big LED screen. And so basically, of course, it's Mickey, and it feels very much like The Sorcerer's Apprentice. As soon as the boss is away, Mickey decides that he's, you know, gonna play and he can do it himself. So he, of course, gets into a little bit of mischief and tries to do different things with the map. Well, the map actually takes him to different places, and so there's an adventure area that it takes him to, which gives us some scenes from the Jungle Book. It's called the Dream Village, which gives us different songs of hope and yearning. So we see Pocahontas, Mulan, and characters from Tangled singing different songs from their shows. Then, of course, we have Celebration, which, I don't know, for me, Celebration, the one song that comes kind of to mind right away would be Under the Sea, because it's just so happy and bubbly. No pun intended.
Sure.
And then we finally finish up with an area of the map that's all about friendship. So we get Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride, which is from Lilo and Stitch, and we get Dig a Little Deeper from The Princess and the Frog. And
which is fantastic.
Which is the finale. It's just great. I won't give too much away. Mm-hmm. But it's very, very well done. I feel like children and adults alike will very much appreciate this show. So definitely recommend taking the time to go. It is, I think it's about a 25-minute show. So it's not just a quick little sit down and then
but
you feel like you're
gone.
But it's
not too long either.
Yep, it doesn't. Yeah, I honestly, at the end of it, I felt like I could have sat and watched more. It was that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, this is definitely one of those things that you should definitely see. I think, you know, I hadn't thought about this show recently, but I think when we go, we should definitely see this if it's there.
100%.
Because it's a good show. And, you know, 25 minutes, it's not that long. It's great to there's a food snack bar right out there too. Mm-hmm. Grab a snack, take your lunch there. Bam,
lunch
done.
Break. I saw actually a lot of people were doing that when we went. Either they had purchased something at the little snack vending area, or maybe they had brought in their own lunches. And so basically, you know, they sat and ate while waiting for the show to begin, and then you got to sit, digest, and enjoy the show.
It is a great show. In fact, talking about it makes me want to watch it again. So I feel like I'm gonna have to pull up a YouTube video later.
I think I know what we're doing later.
Oh, maybe. So, well, that's all the shows that were in the Fantasyland Theater. Now, there are obviously some other shows that we can talk about, but we did not talk about on this episode.
We'll save them for a different episode.
But we can talk about over at the Hyperion Theater, we could talk about Blast, which was the original show there. We could talk about Steps in Time, which was the second show there. We could talk about Aladdin Musical Spectacular, We can talk about the Frozen. So that's all just in the Hyperion. Yeah. So, I mean, there's tons of venues.
So much entertainment and so many different shows going on throughout the resort.
You know, maybe in the future we should talk about some of the street entertainment, because we haven't really talked about that, because we can talk about the Dapper Dans. Or the piano guy at the Coke Corner.
Again, so many. And the thing that makes me kind of sad about the more street performer people is so many times I just watch people go right past them and not even realize that something's going on.
So. Yeah. Well, we talked about that last week
with David.
With David, that's what makes Disneyland so special is enjoying these smaller things instead of having, you know, seeing a show like Making the Magical Map, you know, this big production is one thing, but enjoying the smaller things, the people, the placemaking people, if you will.
Well, we have launched another way for you to join in the conversation with the community. You can head over to dlweekly.net/forum to be taken to our new forums. They are free and open to everyone to chat about Disney parks all around the world. Head on over, make a quick post about yourself in the introductions forum to join in on the discussion.
Well, did you enjoy listening to this episode of DL Weekly? You can support the show for as little as 25 cents an episode. If you want access to the supporter chat like we always talk about, it's only 75 cents an episode. Please consider joining supporters like Anthony G and head over to dlweekly.net/support.
Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land and get this week's trivia answers from James.
All right, let's see how you did. Our first question this week: what Disney character was on hand for the decommissioning of the submarine attraction on September 8th, 1998?
I said Ariel.
And I said Mickey.
You're both wrong.
Donald.
It was Donald.
Donald!
Oh, man. Where did
you come up with that
one? I don't know. I just decided he's one of the Fab Five in water.
That's ducks. Ducks like water.
He's a sailor, after all.
Dang it. Why did I think of this before?
I don't know.
Took too long to get there. All right, our second question from Thompson, the controversial one: did Disneyland open on July 17th or July 18th?
No matter what you say, James, people are going to fight you on it. Yep.
Can't wait to get more one-star reviews for you. Thompson said July 18th is the public opening, and that's when the park opened to the public.
I'm giving Teresa a point for the 17th, too, because... It's debatable. Too controversial.
I gave you two options, and both are correct, I guess.
It's our show. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we know the next question I've gotten wrong, so I will just put a zero down for me already.
So what is the next question, James?
So from Daniel. Daniel asks, how old is the petrified tree displayed in Frontierland?
Teresa said 3 million.
I said 3 million, and Tag's not going to repeat his answer, apparently.
Nope.
Yeah, according to Daniel, it's 75 million years old.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Threes. I don't know why three was ringing a bell, because there's nothing.
I figured me giving you a 5 million gap would have told you it was kind of bigger, but I guess 2,000's still a good guess.
We're not good with hints.
Shh. Number questions. They just get you. All right, the last question from Lauren W. was, what park attraction was originally the ticket booth when Disneyland had the pay-per-attraction model?
And we just said that the two ticket booths that are still found or still in the park are located, there's a mushroom over by Alice in Wonderland.
Yep.
And there's a lighthouse that's over by, is it Storybook Canal?
Yep. Storybook Land Canal Boats, yep.
Well, that's like a correct answer and a bonus point for you.
What did they say? What did she say?
The only one provided by Lauren was the yellow mushroom outside of Alice in Wonderland. So,
yep.
Look at you teaching us all something a little bit extra.
I will say, if you look at the size of the mushroom and you look at the size of that lighthouse, can you imagine being in that little thing all day giving out tickets? Because that's very small.
Which one is?
Both of them.
Yeah, both of them are. I feel like the lighthouse, for some reason, feels more cramped to me than the mushroom is, and that
maybe
might just be because
maybe because
it's
taller and it seems but
still
I just
not fun.
No, well, because think
and
about
hot.
It you probably have tickets in there and like a little counter and money and like
maybe a chair. Very cramped.
How would you fit all that in there?
They have
when
their
we
ways.
Go we should measure.
Yep. Excuse me,
why don't
we please look
why don't you try
inside
to sneak
of
in
the mushroom?
Well, they've boarded it up, it's not even a thing.
Well, yeah, sneak
maybe
in still
a door. We'll have to
we'll have to investigate.
We'll do some reconnaissance.
Sure.
Well, if you have some trivia you'd like to send me to help stump Tag and Therese every week, my email is trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.